You are here. We have taken all of the information from your devices as to what your location is, and we have discovered that you are on this planet. To use an old term, the third rock from the sun. Everything about what it is that you do and experience happens here. Everything that we know in terms of what has transpired in the course of human history, for that matter, the history of the world itself, is all centered in this one place, our Earth, the world in which we live. And when we think about what it is that has taken place over the course of many years, many hundreds of years, many thousands of years, there are moments in time where we would suggest that something made the world change, something made it different, something caused it to change, sometimes for the better, and sometimes not so much. Some of these grand events that took place involved some kind of often technological advancement. For example, improvements in telecommunication. Changes like these have allowed us to have a great strength of communication ability. We can now communicate much more quickly, much more frequently than ever before. We are able to gain more information than we were ever able to gain before. We are able to collaborate and cooperate over great distances because something like the internet has completely changed the world. But then there are also things that aren't so good. There are events that have taken place that we wish had never happened. Events that are not very constructive at all, but events that would actually be causing harm and destruction to the planet. And even though we might wish such things had never taken place, the point is they have, and the world is different because of it. Now, of course, it's not all about good things that happen and bad things that happen as if there's only two choices. Of course, there's all sorts of events that take place that maybe have some ambiguity or a gray area or a little bit of both going on. But the point remains that we have these moments that often significantly change the world in which we live. And most of the time, we're expecting that it is some large event caused by some corporation or country. Something that changes the way things work. But it's interesting that in recent years, there has been a greater sense that it is not only up to these large-scale properties and businesses and nations to cause significant change in the world. Instead, more and more people are recognizing that it can happen on an individual basis, at the grassroots level, as it were. The idea being that all of us would be able to change the world as we consider what it is that we do and how it is that we think about things and what our course of action ought to be with one another. Those great visionaries who love this idea of thinking that, yes, changing the world can happen on this smaller scale by individuals like you and me are ones who had to champion that idea. People like the late Steve Jobs, who said that it's those who are crazy enough to believe that they can change the world that actually do. And of course, he is one that we would say did indeed change the world. Of course, we recognize that not everybody thinks this way. Not everybody is that interested in being part of something that would change the world. Some people just want to take over the world. And then there are those who have all sorts of resources available to them, the means by which they could make an impact in the world, but for some reason they're just not interested in making a difference in the world. Don't know what we're going to do with this group of guys. I mean, come on, right? Someone has to be Batman. Anyways, the point is simply this. When it comes to recognizing that the world can be made different, we who recognize that ought to simply relax into that understanding and consider how it is that we could make a difference. What could we do to change the world? And the moment we start thinking that way, I think certain questions come up. Certain items come to our mind that we need to address, because it's one thing to talk about the concept of changing the world, but it would be important, first of all, to know, does the world need to be changed? That's a really good question. To just simply say that we can change it, but not knowing if it needs to be, you know, let's not put the cart before the horse. And so we ask this question. And what we might do when we look around is say, wait a minute, does the world really need to change? I mean, look outside. Look at the nature we see around here. Look at the beauty of this planet. Recognize that, of course, this is the only planet that we even know of that sustains life. And there's so much that we get to enjoy here and experience. You know what? We could say with hearty agreement with Louis Armstrong, I think to myself, what a wonderful world, right? Because there's a lot that's good about this planet on which we live. Does the world need to be changed? There's so much good here. But it's true, we also know there are things that aren't so good. And so a follow-on question for us to ask then is not just does the world need to be changed, but why does the world need to be changed? That becomes really important. That's where we get our focus drawn to, and we can understand what it is that we need to put our energies into. And so here, why does the world need to be changed? Just watch the news, and we can see. Some of the concerns that we see in our world are poverty. Why is it that in a planet like ours, with powerful and wealthy nations able to share the wealth, why do we even have within our own borders people who are homeless and people who cannot do much more than eke out a living day by day? I know that there are personal choices that can lead to financial ruin and so on, but at the same time, there's certainly some systemic causes that there would be such inequity, let alone looking at other nations in the world. Global terrorism is something that's a huge concern. And it's such an alarming problem to think that there are people who would gather together in violent groups to try to do their effort of changing the world, as it were, but at the cost of other people's lives. And then, of course, nations right now are discussing how exactly to deal with the concern of climate change. That we need to do something different in the planet because of what's going on right now that's leading to an unsustainable future, especially for those poorer nations living very close to the coast who have nowhere else to go. And as water levels rise, there's a concern for their safety. Yeah, we can definitely say that there are reasons why the world needs to change. And so once we've answered that question, what we need to do then is find out how would we go about changing the world? What is it that we would actually be doing to make that change happen? This is something that leads us to a point of discomfort, actually. Because whatever the issue is that we're wanting to address, the moment we come up with a strategy to go about changing the world and start to implement it, we immediately run into challenge. Why? Because you have to think differently to implement the change. You have to act differently to start implementing the change. And when you start thinking and acting differently, there's some resistance, there's some challenge there, and when that starts to take place, you will often encounter other people who are saying, why are you doing it that way, and why are you trying to suggest that I ought to do that too? Aren't you kind of imposing your will on mine? Isn't there a case where you're trying to make me do something I'm not sure I want to do? In fact, what we find is efforts to change the world, once they are being implemented, are actually rather inconvenient, at least for a time. And the most critical moment of bringing about change is often the one where people are most tempted to leave it behind, simply because it's inconvenient. What also comes up during this period of inconvenience is one more question that often comes up, and that is simply this: how long will it take? How long will this have to go on? Are we going to continue on in this inconvenient, challenging, thinking differently, acting differently way? Is this ever going to be solved? But when we ask that question, we have to actually think, what do we expect the answer is going to be? I mean, let's imagine someone who's trying to deal with poverty in the world. If we were to ask them, you're trying to fight poverty, you're trying to deal with it, how long is this going to take? Well, the person fighting poverty is probably going to say, you know what? I would love to tell you that we're going to get rid of poverty tomorrow, but I can't tell you that. We're not going to have it gone tomorrow. It's not going to be over tomorrow. I don't know how long it's going to take, but all I know is we have to continue to do it. We have to keep working at changing this thing of poverty in the world, however long it takes. We need to be inspired by people like this particular world leader who 78 years ago was confronted with a significant change in the world, and he had to address that challenge and implement measures that were not comfortable and were difficult, and he didn't know how long it was going to take. But all he knew is, as he said later on in his speech later in his life, it was important to never, never, never give up. And so changing the world can be done, but it certainly requires answering these questions and handling them well. I wonder if this series of questions relates at all to how God views things. After all, God is the one who we read in the Bible is credited with having put this world together in the first place. God is the one responsible for granting us the life that we enjoy. If we were to ask God these questions, I wonder how he would respond. Does the world need to be changed? If we were to ask that God that question, I think we would find that the answer would be actually yes indeed. And we find this in the first reading we heard this morning from Isaiah. There's a verse that went like this: "The Lord has bared his holy arm before all the eyes of the nations, and all the ends of the earth shall see the salvation of our God." This statement being made is telling us that there is a need for something to change. The fact that God would bare his holy arm, you could imagine it kind of like he's rolling up his sleeves. You know, he's getting ready to get something going, to make something happen. And what it is that all the nations of the world will see is the salvation of our God. Salvation has to do with saving something, with restoring it, with redeeming it, with making it completely whole. And so if the world needs to see God's saving action in the world, then that's implying that there's something that needs to change. And so the fact that this statement is given to us is saying that God is saying, yes, the world needs to change. And so then the follow-on question, why does it need to change? What is it that needs to be changed so significantly? It's one thing to say it needs to change, but what is it? Why? Well, our third reading, the one after the psalm, started off with a verse that wasn't really comfortable to listen to. It was not exactly a fun verse. It says, "For we ourselves were once foolish, disobedient, led astray and slaves to various passions and pleasures, passing our days in malice and envy, despicable, hating one another." It's like, thanks a lot. When we take these words and we try to apply them to our own lives personally, we might be thinking, that doesn't describe me. I mean, I try hard to be nice. I try hard to be a good person. I'm not someone that can be characterized so easily by all of this. But let's not forget that this verse was being written down with a very broad application. And when we look at the news, when we look at how so many human beings operate in this world, I think we can see a whole lot of elements of this in the people around us, in our nations collectively, around the globe as a whole. You see, what all of this boils down to, however you want to term this, is it comes down to living our lives in a self-focused way, in a selfish way, if you will. Even things that at the surface don't seem too wrong, like, of course, we have passions and pleasures. Yeah, it's okay to have passions. It is great to live into your passions, and it's great to enjoy pleasures. I mean, that's one of the beautiful gifts God has given us, is that we could enjoy things. But the thing is, if we are engaging in passions and pleasures without considering wisdom and moderation and self-control, it doesn't take too long before those very same passions and pleasures can become things that ensnare us and enslave us. Addiction is one of those enslavements. And nobody gets addicted to something they hate, right? You only get addicted to something that you enjoyed doing until it goes too far. And so a focus on just what we want can lead to a difficult circumstance personally, but then also to those outside of us. You know, the Bible is full of references saying that we should look not only to our own interests, but also to the interests of others. That we ought not to think of ourselves more highly than we ought, but we should even be willing to consider others better than ourselves. We ought to work in a collaborative and cooperative way, but if we resist that, if we don't want to do it, the reason why is we tend to want to do things for ourselves. This self-focused approach is what the Bible broadly terms sin. We even sang about it in Joy to the World on our way in this evening. And so this sin thing, this self-focused way of life, would be the reason God would say the world needs to be changed. So he's answered the second question. The third question then is, how would you go about changing the world? Well, that's why we're here tonight. It's Christmas. And this is where we celebrate Jesus being born, the baby in a manger in Bethlehem with Mary and Joseph there and the shepherds and the angels singing. This is the way God saw it fit to go about changing the world. This is the means by which he began to make that change. And it's important for us to grasp significantly how God's doing this by reflecting on our gospel reading tonight. It began by saying, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And so there we have this thing called the Word, this concept, but it's clearly divine. It is with God, and it actually is God at the same time. But then at the end of that reading, we heard that the Word became flesh and lived among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. And what this is quickly pointing us to is that the Word is Jesus, that this one who was with God and was God is the baby in the manger. What that means is God came to our human experience as a human being. This is what's known as the incarnation. And so God steps into our human existence, beginning from the start, just like all of us do. And then as Jesus grows and lives and teaches and does all that he does, he begins to show us how we are to live as human beings. He shows us how to live a life that is not self-focused, that is not so focused on one's own passions and pleasures that you get ensnared by them, and certainly one who is not considering himself at the expense of others. In fact, the ultimate description of Jesus's selflessness, of God's self-sacrificing love, is at the crucifixion and resurrection. But that's for Easter. You got to come back in 4 months to get that part of the story. Okay, but for now, Jesus is showing us how to live this human life the way it ought to be lived. God is seeing fit to change the world by having Jesus come into it so that we have this clear picture, an example to follow, someone that we can learn from. And yes, there are times it's inconvenient to follow Jesus's path. But that is the means by which we can see the world changing. Now, the question comes, how long will this take? It's been 2,000 years since Jesus was born. There have been 2,000 plus Christmases. The story has been told over and over and over and over again. We can start thinking about this. It's like, yeah, what? Like, how long is this supposed to take? Well, once again, what kind of answer are we expecting? Are we supposed to say, yeah, it's taken too long, let's abandon the project? Let's think for a moment about what we do see for those that follow Jesus' path of life. Let me be quick to acknowledge the history of the church is full of clear examples of how people were not following Jesus' example of life. So we're not wanting to look at the church as the perfect example of doing it the right way, but at least the church is trying to pay attention to Jesus, and even people who are not part of the church have been inspired by Jesus' example. And when people live the way Jesus gives us as an example, we tend to see things move in a positive direction. Why would we want to stop that process? Why would we ever suggest we should give up on that process? Yes, it's been 2,000 years. But as we look around, the world still needs to change. There still needs to be people inspired to live in a way that is not self-focused. Well, our psalm this evening that we read has one verse in it that is a promise, a very vivid one. It said that the Lord has made known his victory. He has revealed his vindication in the sight of the nations. And this is a very strong statement. It has a bit of a militaristic feel to it as well. The statement he's making is one that is looking forward, looking ahead. And he's basically looking forward to the day that he comes to bring all of this work to completion. The work that Jesus began will be brought to its finish. The participation that God had by coming into the human existence is now us being able to participate in his divine presence to be doing the work that he had in mind to do, and the day is coming when he will come to bring it all to completion. His work comes to its fulfillment. Our work with him is brought to its completion. We see the victory of our God and the vindication, the justification for his desire to see the world change. On this Christmas Eve, I encourage you to see more than the traditional, even somewhat romantic vision of the baby in the manger and the angels and the nativity scene, but to understand that that moment is God implementing his plan to change the world. And he invites us to be part of it. He invites us to participate with him as he has participated with us. And so over the next 12 days of Christmas, let this roll around in your minds as you enjoy time with family, as you exchange gifts and do all these good and wonderful things that Christmas has all about. But think about how God is seeking to change the world through his actions, and then by extension, through ours. Amen.